In re Chatha, Stephen Shumway, counsel for appellants Rajpal Singh Chatha and Taranjit Kaur Chatha, Walter R. Dahl, counsel for Appley West States Holdings, LLC.
Okay, we can see Mr. Dahl, see Mr. Shumway. Okay.
There we go.
Right, Mr. Shumway, would you like to reserve a little time for rebuttal?
I would like to reserve 5 minutes, Your Honor, just
in case. I'll try to tell you right at five if I can, okay?
Thank you.
Okay.
Right. Thank you, Your Honors. I'd like to first go over a little bit of the background on this again. I think that the background, the facts, the circumstances kind of drive this matter. It's a pretty small, well, from a briefing standpoint, I think it's a fairly small, succinct a matter. The decision in this case was rendered. The judgment filed on March 26, 2019. I'm hearing background noise.
Yeah, I am too. If somebody is not actually participating in the argument, if you could mute yourself, I'd be grateful.
All right. I drafted an outline of a notice of appeal on April 4th, in anticipation meeting with my clients.
Somewhere.
I've been on them to see if they would wanted to appeal the case,
right.
And I wanted to be ready in case they did.
I was just worried. I was like, oh, my God, I said Gordon Shumway. I did?
Well, yeah. Well, whoever is participating with the not
Alf
argument,
oh, yeah.
Mutual phone.
Bill, it's Judge Lafferty, it's Sarah.
Okay, Sarah, can you?
Deputy.
Thank you. If you could mute your phone, I'd be grateful. Sorry, Mr. Shumway. I'm going to give you an extra 30 seconds, okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
We're all doing our best under the difficult circumstances.
I've had a number of Zoom meetings, and I understand the way. So I met with my clients on the 4th of April, very late in the evening, around 5:30, 5 o'clock, somewhere in that area. And they came in, they sat down, we talked about it, and after about an hour of discussion, they wanted to go forward with the appeal. At that hour, I was already ready to leave the office. I had things to do that night. The next day, I had a hearing in front of Judge Jaime on a motion for relief from stay. I had an unlawful detainer trial in Sacramento County Superior Court, and I was representing a creditor at 341 meeting, where we had some issues regarding fraud and some missing equipment from a restaurant. So I was spending most of that evening working on those matters. Now, I knew that I was going to be done by my 341 meeting was at 1 o'clock, so I had plenty of time in the afternoon to come back and file the appeal, finish off the appeal and get that filed. As I'm leaving the courtroom, I find out that my mother, who was 87 years old at the time, I'm sorry, she just passed away right day after the day after Easter. So, but she was 87 years old a year ago. So, and she had scoliosis. She had shrunk from 5'8" to 5'2" because of the scoliosis. She had back pain. She had numbness in her legs. She had fallen before. She had just gotten out of 30 days rehab where they were trying to get her muscle strength back where she could get up and move around. And so it was a touchy situation for me. Now, granted, I do have four brothers and one sister who live within 30 miles of my mother. And I'm on them constantly trying to get them to perform services for her, to check on her, see what's going on. They were not responding. Things were not happening. I'm long distance, 600 miles away, trying to make sure that things are taking place. But when she fell, yes, I had a great concern. I was really upset. I went home. I got on the phone with my brothers. I got on the phone with the doctors, trying to find out where my mother was. And frankly, the last thing on my mind was my practice. That may be not the way it should be, but that's the way I work. That's the way it happened in my case.
So, counsel, just to clarify,
yes.
Is that the day that the notice of appeal was to be filed, the last day that it could be filed timely?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So, I just want to make sure.
That day, as I'm on my way back to my office to file the appeal, this happens, and my mind goes in a different direction. You know, and one of the reasons that this hit me as hard as it did was because my father passed away in 2009, and I had an opportunity to go visit him 1 week before he passed away, and I chose not to go. I sent my wife and chose not to go because I was busy taking care of my practice, and having missed him before he passed away, this was weighing heavily on my mind. Now, so as a background, now getting into this, the circumstances as to whether or not there was an excusable neglect. The lower court cited Medicare Investment Services for the 4-point test.
Wait, just one second. So what happened the next day?
The next day, I'm busy taking care of other things. I'm on the phone with the doctors. I'm setting up a medic alert so that my mom has she pulls the button if she falls. I've fallen, I can't get up. That company, and talking to my brothers and sisters and saying, look, you know, we need a schedule. You've got to work this out. I'm trying to get what I had scheduled at work done with what I was trying to take care of my mother.
What happened the next day?
The next day, I'm in court, and I'm taking care of some other matters, and I get back from court, and it hits me that here's this paper sitting here that I haven't finished. So I immediately look at that, recognize that I'm already delinquent on filing the papers. I'm also sitting as a pro tem the next morning in Placer County Superior Court, and I've got to prepare for the hearings the next day. That day, as soon as I get out of Superior Court, I go and I file the notice of appeal.
Okay. So that's about a day, right, after you figured out that you have a problem?
It, I think there was a two-day lapse between the 8th and the 11th.
Is there a particular reason why you didn't file with a notice of appeal that, you know, you knew was late? Particular reason why you didn't file the motion for leave then, or didn't do it until what I think might have been the last day you could have done that?
I filed the notice of appeal hoping that I was sliding in under the deadline. And
but you pretty well knew you weren't, right? Because you said on the 11th, you realized, oh my gosh, I should have done this thing. I didn't do it, right?
Right.
Okay.
And then, when I received notice from the appellate panel that, hey, you're late, that's when I took it upon myself to file the file a late appeal.
And that was the last day you could have done it, right?
I'm sorry?
You did it the last day you could have done it.
I did it as soon as I got the notice from the appellate panel. So, yes, that would have been the last day.
Okay.
Have you filed appeals before?
I have filed, I've appealed Judge Jaime once before. I filed two prior appeals in my 35 years.
A notice of appeal is?
Well, one of those appeals was in a state court action. It has a 60-day timeline.
Right, but the notice of appeal itself is just a single document, one line that says, I appeal the decision, and you either list the document, the date of the order, or you attach a copy of the order to the notice, and that's it, right?
That is correct, Your Honor, and I would have, and I had that prepared. I mean, I had the outline prepared, but I couldn't file that without my client's permission.
If you had filed it before your clients gave permission and they decided not to go forward with the appeal, you simply withdraw the notice of appeal, right?
Well, that was not my understanding. My understanding was that taking action without authorization for your clients is kind of a breach of your ethical duty to your client.
And alternatively, missing the deadline and subjecting your client to no review of a decision and creating malpractice was a better choice?
No, Your Honor. At the time that I drafted the notice of appeal, I was not planning on being late with the appeal. It was only when the circumstances caused me to miss the date that that issue came up. It would have, if my clients had come to me on the 4th, 5th, 6th, it would never have happened. Unfortunately, the perfect storm hit, and it happened on the 8th.
So when Judge Jaime made his decision, did he set forth what he was required to review, what standard he was required to assess this decision under?
He referred to Pioneer Investment Services, and he went through the four steps. He focused on Gibbons versus United States, which is an Eighth Circuit case, instead of Kay versus Andrews, which is a Ninth Circuit case, which gives equal credence. Kay gives equal credence to all four issues. He then went on to kind of discuss that my situation was not as dramatic or as drastic, and maybe shouldn't have caused me the concern that it did, because it didn't meet the same examples that he cited in Schultz, where a husband and his wife had a medical condition, but he ended up working part time through the medical condition, but still missed a deadline. And another case where a wife suddenly had a seizure and eventually died. He tried CPR and she died, and he missed a deadline. He said, "Your mother dying is not as bad."
Okay, we're at about 4:30. Let me give you a question you can think about and answer when you come back.
Certainly.
It seems like the cases are not hung up on how compassionate we should be. The cases seem to turn on how directly did these circumstances affect and prevent the doing of whatever the act was supposed to be. And that seems to be the test, at least in the cases that Judge Jaime, relied on. And if you want to, when we come back, if you want to react to that, I'd be grateful. Okay?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Dahl?
Judge Lafferty, Judge Brand, Judge Gann, it's nice to appear before you. Thank you. And I wish I could appear before you in person, but I guess that'll have to wait for another time.
You have to wait for a while.
Your Honors, I think that this is a difficult argument for Mr. Shumway, and it's a difficult argument for me as well. I appreciate...
Let me ask you a question right out of the box, okay?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Shumway alluded to Pinkay as being a little bit different standard, arguably, from the case that was most readily cited by Judge Jaime. And what Pinkay does seem to say is that the fact, one should look at the factors, quote, equally or something along those lines. Do you think that this judgment is criticizable in that really only, I think a fair reading of Judge Jaime's ruling is factors one and two were at the worst neutral and might actually have been somewhat in favor of relief. Factor four, I think he ascribed some of the delay to a lack of good faith. As we discussed this, we might agree that that really fits more easily under three. What really happened here was Judge Jaime, I think, just had a very definite opinion about factor three. And the question is, was that the appropriate balance? Should he have balanced this a little bit differently? And I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Your Honor, I think that Judge Jaime could have balanced it a different way. You might have. Judge Gann might have. Judge Brand might have. Mm-hmm. He did. He was the trial judge in the discharge lawsuit that was the ultimate attempted appeal, and he has seen both of us work. I don't want to say anything bad about Mr. Shumway. I like Mr. Shumway very much, but this is a case where it's an abuse of discretion issue, and the judge has to take into account a broad variety of factors. Obviously, the four that are cited in Pioneer are, I guess, the most important. I think it's possible that Judge Jaime, judging by the 15-page memorandum that he wrote, believed that item number four, the good faith issue, tipped him over the edge. I think it's possible that Judge Jaime believed that the one-day delay between recognition on the 11th and filing on the 12th, called into question the good faith. But on balance, this is what Judge Jaime decided, and I believe that the record indicates that there's support for what he decided based upon the abuse of discretion standard. I don't know if I answered your question to the
Oh, you did. I mean, and thank you for doing it so directly, and I didn't mean to keep you away from all your other great arguments. So
I don't have a lot of other great arguments.
we'll be the judge of that, okay?
So what I hear you saying is, in your view, this was a decision that he had the right to make. He applied the right standard. He found facts as he found them. None of the facts were not supported by the record in some regard. Either there was evidence that was undisputed, or he had to discern what this meant. That was what he was empowered to do. We may not agree with it, but it falls within the range of acceptable conduct by the judge under the circumstances, given the evidence that was presented.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I've been practicing a long time, just as Mr. Shumway has, and sometimes were I to come to Arizona and be in your court, there's things I might not like that you did or decisions that you issued, but ultimately you have quite a bit of discretion as a judge, and Judge Jaime was exercising that discretion. Again, might have been different than the way you decided or I would have decided or Judge Brand would have decided, but that's what he did.
Okay. If you you have 10 minutes. If you are finished, you're finished. That's just fine, Mr. Doss. Totally up to you.
Well, one of my clients a long time ago gave me a small little white card that said, "Know when to stop talking and do."
Mm-hmm.
I'm done.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Shumway?
Yes, Your Honors.
I'm gonna say you've got 5 minutes, somewhat arbitrarily, because I think you lost about 30 seconds in the back and forth. Okay?
I appreciate that. Yeah. I may not need it, but I appreciate having it. Okay. The question is, you know, how comparing, I guess, my circumstances to the circumstances that were in the two cases cited by Judge Jaime, why should the standard, or what should be the standard to determine whether or not there's excusable neglect? You know, each individual reacts a little bit differently to situations and circumstances, and I understand that the court has to come up with some kind of objective standard to incorporate or to understand these subjective situations involving counsel. Now, in the one case, you've got in the two cases, both cases involved the lawyer's spouse. And I fully understand if my wife was to suddenly take ill or to fall or something like that, I would have the same reaction that those two attorneys did, and it would I would be by her side. And taking care of things, and yes, that would cause neglect. But I don't think that it's any different when it's your mother, especially under this situation where I'm 600 miles away. I've got brothers who don't seem to want to take care of things, and I've got to concern myself not only with what's going on with my mother, and at that time.
Can I clarify one point?
Yes, sir.
Did you make the argument before Judge Jaime that your brothers were not, in your view, likely to do what needed to be done?
I did. I said I have siblings and siblings and nieces and nephews back there, but I can't depend on any of them to ever do anything.
No, but that was in the record before Judge Jaime.
That was.
Okay, thanks.
And not exactly those words.
Mr. Shumway, just to make it clear.
Yes.
What I mean, maybe I misunderstand this, but it seems to me what you're saying is that you think your arguments, your position, was as compelling as some of the other cases. And for Judge Jaime not to adopt that rationale from those other cases and to employ it in your case would be wrong. And we ought to tell him That's not the way this ought to work. It ought to be uniform. It ought to be applied the same in various similar circumstances where there's a death or where there's an injury to a close family member. And so since he didn't do that here, we should find that that's an abuse of discretion. Is that a fair statement?
That's close, yes, Your Honor. I think that, I don't want to take away from Judge Hyman's discretion, but within an objective standard, once you meet certain thresholds, and I think that maybe a mother is not as important as a wife. In my case, it is, but I think once you've reached that standard, that should certainly take the biggest weight in figuring out the circumstances and whether or not you meet that subjective standard of excusable neglect.
So let's assume that the relationship is equal. Does he then take into consideration the delay that was occasioned by it? How many days? What other activities occurred? What could have been done and wasn't done in the interim? Does he have a right to balance that into the equation and say, okay, I'll say your mother's an important figure, but you had one, two, or three more days before you took any action. That, to me, doesn't answer the, in his mind, doesn't balance the same as those other cases.
Well, I understand. But in those other cases, there was longer delay than my 3 days. There were, in one case, several days. And in one case, I think there was even a month or two. So, my recovery was much faster than theirs. And I acted as quickly as possible as soon as I discovered the situation.
Answer this if you go over, because I think it's fairly critical. The difference in the standards seems to be this. The way Judge Hyme read the cases where he found excusable neglect, the traumatic event occurred in a context in which the attorney really was prevented from doing something because it was right in front of that person, and that person needed to be physically involved in care or something else that literally took their time away from the task. Arguably, that was not the case with you, but your argument seems to be that that's the wrong focus. Once you find the threshold of, for lack of a better word, upsetting circumstances, the rest of it sort of doesn't matter. And that's really what Judge Hyme applied was not the right standard. Is that a fair statement?
I think it goes a little bit beyond that, Your Honor.
Okay.
In the other two cases, those two individuals, those two attorneys, had additional time after the event occurred.
I see. Okay.
I was already at the deadline.
Okay. Because I think, like Judge Gann, I'm wondering how far do we? I mean, we have to go pretty far to say somebody abused their discretion. So if we get convinced that, boy, there's just a standard out there that doesn't make any sense, and unfortunately Judge Hyme applied it, then okay. But if this is, if this is something that is simply within his discretion, it's tough for us to
substitute our judgment.
You can imagine, okay?
And I fully understand that, and that's what makes this a pretty narrow, focused appeal.
By the way, my condolences. I'm very sorry.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Anything else?
That's all, sir.
All right, then the matter is submitted. Thank you for your very good arguments, and thanks to both of you for your wonderful professionalism in a very difficult circumstance. Thanks to both.
Thank you, judges.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.